Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Across the evening water, smuggling guns and arms across the Spanish border. The wind whips up the waves aloud. The ghost moon sails among the clouds. Turns the rifles into silver on the border.
That is On the Border by Al Stewart.
That's cool.
That's a great
tune,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a mover. It's a mover. And, of course, I picked it because tonight's book is about gun runners and a family that's from the South. And we'll get with Tommy here in just a little bit. But, Bobby Jean, I know you're there someplace. Are you with us, Bobby Jean?
I'm here.
Okay. Did you actually get a chance to listen to that song before tonight?
I did not. I was reading the book instead.
Remember, I told you it was really going to be good.
But I recognize that song. I remember that song. Yes.
And you have bourbon in your cup already, don't you?
You
little scutter.
Maker's Mark. Were we talking about that earlier?
Yeah, we were.
And evidently, you are making your mark.
Tonight. Oh, you are making and have made your mark. Okay, well, the Writer's Block. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Writer's Block. This is it's a Tuesday or this is a Thursday, isn't it?
It's a free for all.
Oh my God, I'm going insane. I'm Jim Christina, your host in the studio tonight with Bob Brill, and of course Jerry Christina is joining us again. Bob,
hello.
Hello. Bobby Jean Bell, of course, is on the phone from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Bobby, say hi.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
No, she's been drinking bourbon for the last
I know.
Hour. She's already high.
And you know what?
I really want to get into this book. I've been so engrossed in this book. I didn't realize what time it was, and I almost didn't get set up in time.
Well, the whole book it just flowed. And it went through so much.
But it's so great.
I know it, but it's like I told Tommy the other night on the phone. I said, you know, this is a great story about a gun-running family from Vicksburg.
It's like everything that could happen did happen.
Yeah, everything that could happen good did happen. So anyway, let's get this ball rolling. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. And like to say, when you are a new writer and you've punched that last period and got all those pages in front of you, where do I go from here? And where you go from here is to get us an email or get a hold of us by phone, and we'll take a look at your manuscript and tell you what we can do for you. We will not, we don't go into marketing for you. That's your job. But we will get you published and get you hard books on your shelf, and at a very low cost, actually. And it behooves you, if you're a new writer, to give us a holler. The number is 805-795-3165, or you can go to email, which is jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com, or rpalonelli, P-A-L-O-N-E-L-L-I, @tuscanybaybooks.com. And what is that noise, that bonging?
Maybe it's my computer.
Okay. It's Albuquerque. Albuquerque is going off. Okay. Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. Somebody's breathing heavily into the phone. National brands include Rock Mountain Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com. And your other one's still open, yes, Bobby Jean?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so that one is www.scvoutwest.com. Enter code WB100, that stands for Writer's Block 100, and receive $10 off on your order. Or you can call them toll-free at 877-340-9378. And I got to tell you that these folks are great. Well, Bobby Jean is one of them, and she'll be, you know, she can toot her own horn, but not right now. Okay. Since 2009, wait till later. Since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, and LTL service that's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your full truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled using their customized traffic movement program. So call TFM Truckload or Target Freight Management today, LTL. Call it 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski for Truckload or any of the fine account managers at 888-653-1323 for LTL. Tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, you can go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. And for those of you who do not know what LTL is, LTL means less than a truckload. Okay, Tommy Simons, or Simons, I don't know, we'll ask him. Tommy, is it Simmons or Simons?
Simmons,
okay. Is a, author of 8 books, 5 of which are currently in print, and 1 of which was picked up Frankfurt Book Fair and published in Europe. He grew up in Mississippi, attended Marion Military Institute, the U.S. Naval Academy, the University of Southern Mississippi, and the University of Alabama. He served as a commercial, I can't read because your thing is cutting it off. Okay, well, anyway, the guy's like totally awesome and truly godlike. He's a pilot. He's a great guy, and he warned me the other night, he talks slow, but he thinks fast. So there you have it.
And if he's a pilot, he's truly godlike because he's closer to the God.
He's closer to God than we are. So welcome to the Writer's Block, if you would, please. Tommy Simmons. So, welcome to the madness, Tommy.
Well, I appreciate it, and it does sound a little mad out there, but then that is Los Angeles.
It is.
Well, you did stick with us this long, so.
You know, we haven't had one hang up on us yet, but, you know, by God, it's gotten close a few times. So, I'm glad you could join us. Everybody in here is sick. Coughing and wheezing.
No, wait a second. I'm not there. I was coughing just because I need a bottle of water.
Well, okay. Well, I do. Me too.
No, that's okay.
Talk, Bob, and I'm going to drink.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Tommy's book is, and you like Tommy rather than Tom, right?
Either one is fine.
Oh, all right.
Tommy makes me feel younger.
I was going to say, you know.
all my books are under Thomas E. Simmons, but right. Tommy is fine.
Well, you know, the thing, Tommy, about your books, and we'll explain quickly that it's like a long, it's a big portion of history. And you start out in the Civil War, and you end up in the books read so far, right around in the beginning of World War One, and it's like some of the most massive research, and we joked around on before we got on anything that could happen, did happen. But where did you get the idea for what you wanted to do with this and bring it over, you know, decades and decades to fruition?
50 years in the life of an interesting lady.
Yes. Yes.
The idea came to me from a friend of mine who studied and then gave up gynecology. He became an eye doctor, an ophthalmologist. But he mentioned something that they had come across in his medical school. And I don't want to give away the secret, but it was a very unusual conception. And it intrigued me a little bit, and finally I got a copy of the doctor's article in, after the Civil War. And he published an article in a medical journal on that. And it intrigued me, and I thought, well, I wonder what the life of a person like that would have been. I thought about a man to start with, and I switched to a very interesting lady. And the book follows her life for 50 years.
Yeah, and that's Bethany Quinn.
Bethany Quinn.
Beverly Bethany Quinn,
right,
also
BB.
Goes by BB.
Which is, of course,
that's
Bullet
right.
Baby.
For a very real reason. I don't want to really give that away tonight. But that's a reason. But I did tons of research. You know, whenever an author writes a historical fiction,
right,
he should and better be correct on the historical scenes and sites and events and people, because readers are very smart people, and you don't want to get caught wrong on a historical novel. So I did tons of research, and it's a little unusual for a novel, but in the back, in the appendix of By Accident of Birth, I have about 2.5 pages of reference sources, and just so that a reader could, if he wanted to check on where a fact or a site or a description or a person, a real person, came from, mm-hmm. they can look that up.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it odd to write?
And so far nobody's caught me saying something that was not correct.
Ah.
Tommy, did you find it odd, or I guess the question is, how did you feel about writing from a woman's point of view?
Well, you know, I have always admired women, and they're courageous and smart, and, you know, in the South, the whole manhood of the South came home broken and depressed and losers. It was the Southern woman that got them up off their knees and started putting things back together. So I admired that, and I wrote it. There's a lot of adventure. In fact, it touches 5 different wars during that 50-year period.
Yes, it does.
And so the men I wrote for the adventure, and for the ladies, for the strong woman that this child developed into in very hard circumstances.
Right, right. You captured the siege of Vicksburg, I mean, almost perfectly. And mm-hmm. well, perfectly, because I wasn't there. I couldn't tell you what the right or wrong of it was. But I, being a historian, and I noticed that you hit the siege right on the money, up to and including the sinking of the ironclad running down the river, which actually was a great scene. And you know what?
Yes, and
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say.
No, ask your question.
Oh, I was just going to say, actually, it was more a statement than a question, but I have found, because I wrote one historical novel, and I found that the people that bought it because they were interested in the subject matter. And so I found that a lot of people that buy historical novels buy them because they're interested in the subject matter. And you hit it so nailed it right dead nuts on the whole book. I mean, you could see their dresses,
you could see
their clothing, the way they acted, the way they talked, the way they carried themselves. And to say that Bethany was a strong woman is absolutely true, but then you have to remember, as was her mother and her grandmother, were extremely strong women.
The whole family.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, up to and including the grandfather and the brother.
Yeah, Daniel.
Jonathan.
Well, they had come through quite a bit and built what they had, and then it was all threatened. And Vicksburg, people don't really understand, they were bombarded day and night for 47 days.
Yep.
That did not happen again until the Blitz of London, for civilians to be under that constant roar and explosion and casualties and people blown apart. It was really a horrific place to be in Vicksburg during the siege. And the men who fought there fought until everybody ran out of food. They ran out of rats. They ran out of everything.
Yeah,
they,
cats, dogs, everything.
Vicksburg really didn't. Vicksburg didn't fall by force of arms. It fell because the people were starving to death.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly enjoyed, as the story continues, you take us to Paris, and we move ahead in the story some, and you do make a reference to Paris having been under siege at one time in its history, kind of relating that back to Vicksburg. But you take Bethany, who's now getting an education in Paris, and you introduce her to a lot of the kind of the paparazzi, the famous people of the time period, or become famous as the world goes on. And I had to go and see, I did go online to see if there was an actual painting by Manet of that famous sea battle from that one of our characters is involved in, and also the luncheon on the boat party, on the boat party, and you describe that Bethany is in that, and I went and looked at that painting. I'm like, oh my gosh, there she is.
I had just lots of fun doing that, and people asked me, well, did you have a beginning and a middle and an ending in mind when you began it? And I said, of course not. It wouldn't have been any fun for me to write it if I knew how it was going to turn out.
Sure. Sure. Well, I have to say your epilogue was a somewhat of a shocker. At least.
Well,
not so much of a shocker, but I mean a surprise.
Yes, and the sequel, it's really developed into a trilogy. The sequel is called The Last Quinn Standing, and nobody in the family really knew who everybody was, because of the circumstances. Certainly the son, and the sequel, The Last Quinn Standing, picks up the story where, by accident of birth, ends at the World War One, mm-hmm. and carries him through World War One. And then the third book will be out in August, September, or November. You know how publishers are.
Yep.
But it will carry on the family, the members that are still left, in the between World War One and the beginning of World War Two. Most people don't realize it was a very short 20 years between the peace treaty of 1919 and then when Germany and Russia invaded Poland in 1939.
Right.
That's just 20 short years.
Right, right.
And yet during that period that will be in this third book is a great deal happened. The war ended. The roaring 20s were pretty wild. And then
the Great Depression.
Toward the end of World War One, you had the influenza epidemic, and then the stock market crashed, and the Depression, and then World War Two started. So it's it was a really compressed time with a lot happening in it, and so that carries the family. I hope I'm through. The way I ended the third book, they might make me do another one, but it carries this same family in a saga, historically correct. all the way through with characters. And as you mentioned, she was in Paris because her uncle wouldn't send her to a Yankee school.
Right, right.
So he sent her to school in Paris because he never had that opportunity.
Right.
Tommy, I want to ask you about being a Southern man, writing from a Southern point of view, or did you struggle with the way you wanted to present this? The war between the states is still a touchy issue in the South, I know. And did you struggle with a viewpoint that you wanted to take versus maybe a viewpoint you had or your family had or didn't have?
Well, I wanted to write it as honestly as I could in the way it really was. Slavery is faced in it, and both I guess the kind side, if you can look at house servants that way, and the brutal other side. All that is in this book by accident of birth, and I wanted the characters and the settings to be honest. And I hope that you all have read the book, and I hope that I did that I presented it that way.
You did.
Well, I can say that I finished reading the book about 3 minutes before I connected by Skype to the show, and the hair on my arms is still standing up from the epilogue. And of course, we will not do any spoiler alerts, but we hope that that would encourage our listeners to go get this book.
Well, I certainly hope so. And as the epilogue goes into the sequel, and it gets a little, the complications stay there.
Mm-hmm.
For quite a while, I'm sure if you've read the first one, you're going to enjoy. I've been told that people really enjoy the second one in a way. Every day somebody calls me, when is the third book coming out?
You must love that.
Yeah, I do, and I don't, because it should have already been out, but you authors don't have a lot of control over their publishers.
Not usually.
Has this
Although I we did have an argument about the cover of the second book, and actually I designed the cover for that.
Good for you. Yeah. Have you optioned these at all, or is that in the works at all?
No. You know, when you're a little boy down in Mississippi, it's hard to walk across the street to a producer like you can in L.A. But I would hope that somebody will do that. I have three books that everybody that reads it says, when is the movie coming out? They really rag me about that. And it's difficult, and I know you have to somehow get it to pique the interest of a producer, but these three books, the book that you just read, By Accident of Birth, since it's going into a trilogy, people ask me, well, why don't they make a television series out of that? Long-term deal, and I would love to see that. And there are other books, The Man Called Brown Condor. People just drive me crazy about when is that going to be a film. And I know you haven't read that book.
Mm-mm.
But it's about a black child that grew up in Gulfport, Mississippi. It's a true story in the 10s and 20s, and he had a dream as a little boy. He saw Moisant fly a plane and landed on the beach at Gulfport. And it became his dream, and aviation was closed to blacks. He couldn't even get when he grew up and graduated from Tuskegee, he couldn't even get a ride in a plane. And yet he had the determination to to trick his way into Curtis Wright School in Chicago and was so good they kept him as an instructor, and then he had his own school in Chicago. And then the little country of Ethiopia was going to be invaded by Mussolini. All this is true. And Haile Selassie, the emperor of Ethiopia, had heard about this man, this remarkable man who had done it all on his own, and contacted him. His name was John Robinson, and asked him would he consider coming to Ethiopia, that they needed him really badly. And to make a long story short, John Robinson, the little black child from Gulfport, Mississippi, wound up the commander of the Ethiopian Air Corps against Mussolini, which was the first fascist invasion and the first blitzkrieg, even worse because they used tons of mustard gas, and survived that. And he later returned during World War II and helped them rebuild their little air force and established Ethiopian Airlines. And I was pleased the president of Ethiopia and the president of Ethiopian Airlines invited me to please come and talk about this man, because they were losing his story too. It was covered in the papers in the late 30s, but the Spanish Civil War began, and that wiped his story away, and I just happened to stumble on it accidentally. But that book would make a fantastic movie. It's about a period of history the public doesn't know much about an extraordinary country. Ethiopia became a Christian nation in the year 400 and survived with Muslim nations all around it. And the only time it was ever defeated was by Mussolini.
Hmm.
So it would make a fantastic movie. Maybe somebody's listening out there.
Well,
Bob's
listening.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, that period of history regarding Ethiopian Haile Selassie and the Italian gassing of the masses there is a particular interest to me, and it was brutal, and
they fought so well. France fell in 30 days. It took 6 months with using everything that the Italians had to defeat the Ethiopians.
The interesting thing about that was,
and some of them went up in the mountains and never gave up, kept fighting.
And one of the interesting things about that too is they were using weapons like from before the last century.
Right.
That's all they had.
Right.
You know, and the interesting thing
that's
too
all
is,
they had.
Yeah.
Robinson's planes were unarmed because they took it was a small air force, but they took the machine guns from the planes and gave them to the infantry, and the planes were mainly used as communications between the front lines. Mm-hmm. And Addis Ababa.
And it was basically Italy's revenge for a previous war with Ethiopia.
My people.
Yeah.
You know your history.
Our people, yeah. Well, Jim and I are both Italian, so, you know. It kind of comes with the territory when you're growing up Italian. It's sometimes the story doesn't get told properly. It kind of gets out of whack. But, when you start looking at it years later, when you realize what happened.
If you would like, I can get the publisher to mail you a copy.
Hey, I'd love it.
If you'll email me the address.
Well, and Jerry, take care of it.
If you promise to get it to a producer, particularly, you know, the Black Panther was such a big hit, I'm sure they're looking for a follow-up, and this is a real story of a real hero.
Uh-huh. Well, I've got a couple pitch meetings coming up. How's that?
There you go. Yeah, Bob deals with producers all the time. So.
I do have a couple of pitch meetings coming up, and maybe I can talk about that.
If you'll email me, I will be happy to have the publisher send you a copy.
You got it. We'll do that.
The title is The Man Called Brown Condor.
Well, the interesting thing is, too, is right now is a good time to pitch stories about strong women in Hollywood. And so that's, Accident of Birth is also, should get a good look here pretty soon. But anyway, I'll let go for that.
I like the book, and I think I would like the one about Brown Condor as well. I have to break for just a few minutes, and we'll be back to you in just a minute. Don't go away. And
sounds wonderful. I'll stand by.
Okay, we're going to be doing a little commercial here, so I'll just leave your mic on. You can just go ahead and talk to you and talk if you want. Who cares? You know, it's only live radio. Okay, imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is, for your dog. It's not clean white beaches, Jerry, so don't give me the look. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for a one-night or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dogs return home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? Well, of course, the answer is going to be your dog's, because this is an ad for All Dogs Rule. Check out their website, alldogsrule.com, or give them a call, 805-524-1100. And Russ and Karen will thank you, and we thank you. And that's it for All Dogs Rule. Okay. It is now 7:30. We are in the studio and on the phone with Tommy Simmons and talking about his book, By Accident of Birth. It's a great read. If y'all are history majors or just like historical fiction, this is a book you want to read. This is a part one of a three-parter, and it's a killer. It's almost 500 pages, 468, something like that. It's a long book, but it reads fast.
Well, that was a question that I had, Tommy. Was there anything you had to edit out of this book that you wished you had left in?
That's a good question. I'm sure all authors face that. There was nothing controversial that I would have taken out. I put in some very hard things. It's a book about the South, the defeated South, the way it really was, and also a great deal takes place in Cuba. Most people think that Cuba won their freedom with a little six-month Spanish-American War, but the Cubans had tried before in a 10 years war, which this book is involved in. And then later there was 5 years war of liberty, and it was only the last 6 months that the United States joined and helped them defeat Spain. So there's Cuba, and there's the South, and there is Paris, and romance, and love. But I hope that I wrote that with real affection and love for the characters, and in a way that the reader will feel and experience the emotion of both the terrible war scenes and the love scenes. And I tried to present that period of the South and the world in Cuba the way it really was then, and we've forgotten most of that, I think.
I think you're probably right. I do have to say that I was talking to Bobby Jean yesterday, we were talking about your book, and of course we always have these conversations in which we get into stuff that shows up in the book, and we were mentioning about Bethany, and that Bethany actually had a child as well. And Bobby Jean's comment, I have to say this, Bobby Jean, so don't be embarrassed. First thing she says was, the normal way? And I said, yeah.
Bethany, yes.
More than once.
Her mother knew that was not necessary.
Well, it's
actually that conception. I understand that they are... you know, a lot of people made jokes about that, but when you think of writing that at the period that it was written, that it was quite the doctor stuck his neck way out on a limb. Oh, yeah. And then tried to And then in the actual journal, he makes a joke at the end, which is the way I treated it in the book, because it was the first of its kind. And of course, the women in the book are strong and beautiful and hardworking and brave. But the question that you asked me, did I want to edit something out or do I wish I'd taken something out? I have to tell you that I did so much research that book started out at almost 800 pages. So we took out a great deal.
Holy, over 300 pages, yeah.
Because I don't want to act like I'm trying to educate the reader. I want the reader to go at it for the story.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We kept cutting and cutting and cutting. And people ask me, well, how do you write? And I said, well, everyone has a book in them. And the research is the fun part. And the writing is simple. You just sit down at a typewriter and open a vein.
I love that. We can make a note of that. Yeah. Sit at a typewriter and open a vein.
How funny.
Well, this does go on to be a series. When you were writing the first book that we all read, did you anticipate and visualize a second and third book, or did you?
I did not. My agent said, "I want you got to start right now. You got to go on. How does it work?"
Mm-hmm.
And so she encouraged me, and I sat down and started writing.
With book two and book three, did you write them so they could be standalone if somebody had not had had not yet read book one? Or do you have to really have some understanding of the characters as you go into book two?
You are a genius. You're just a genius with all that. Yes, when you write a sequel, or at least when I do, it has to stand alone. You pick it up in a bookstore and like what it says about it, but you have to bring the reader up to date in very subtle ways.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you haven't read the first book, things are you understand the family and where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And the third book the same way, although it's a new generation.
Mm-hmm.
But part of all of that is runs through, the river runs through, so to speak. But a sequel does have to stand alone. You can't say, well, don't buy this book until you've read the other one. You can't mm-hmm. do that.
Right.
So I think if you all get the first sequel, the second book is out, Last Quinn Standing, and if you get that, that will answer your question. Yes, it stands alone, but yes, you bring the reader up to speed on the past. Mm-hmm. And you do that, and you don't say, okay, here's where this is coming from, you got to read this chapter. It's not done like that. I don't do it like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just blends in, and you pick some of that up from the conversations and the characters. You just pick that up as you're reading the current story.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
It did.
It does. You must have to keep some really great notes for yourself as you write the second one to remember things from the first one that you may need to weave in there.
Either that, or you have to have a very good memory.
Yeah.
Either that, or especially those 300 pages that you took out, you can't refer back to.
Or did you use the 300 pages you took out in the second book?
Threw them away.
Ah, okay.
Threw them away. I cut back on things. It was fun, but it was getting too lengthy and too heavy. So I hope the book, you all have read it, and I hope that it flowed well with you, and you wanted to keep reading it and what was happening, and that there's enough excitement and all in it to keep your interest. So if I'd left some of the, you can get too bogged down in research. You've uh-huh. done the research, and dadgummit, you want to show the reader all of that.
Right.
But you can't.
Right, right.
Well, you do give us enough that if to get us up to speed. You know, there is a section where two of the characters talk about the Ku Klux Klan yes. as they share their experience with Bethany. And Bethany learns a little bit about the history of Cuba, and we get to learn that history as well. And you still did that in like a page and a half. It was fascinating. And I think as a reader, it's what makes you, there should be maybe something tantalizing enough that you say, I want to know more about that. And
right.
then,
mm-hmm.
you know, you mm-hmm. go on to do that. Mm-hmm. I do have one other question. This is a question we've asked many of our authors over the last several weeks. Do you read your reviews? And if you do, and there's some not so good ones, how do you handle it?
I do, and I'm happy to read reviews. I'm happy to hear from readers. Before we leave, I'd like to give them my email and my website, because
oh,
they can see about the other books that are there. I don't know if you all have gone to that website.
Oh yes.
Or not. But I try to. Fortunately, I really haven't had any bad reviews or people picking it at little things. Mm-hmm. The reviews have been very, very good and very intelligent, and they've showed me that they've read the book. And if somebody cuts me up, you just bleed a little
and move on.
Yes, and you bleed
hard.
A little and you know, like I believe it was a Scotsman that said, I lay me down now to bleed a little, and then I'll rise up and fight thee longer.
There you go. Oh, that's
so
nice.
So that's kind of the way you have to handle tough critics.
Okay, now comes the big question, Tommy. We call this show The Writer's
Shoot.
Block for a reason. Not only is it about writing and writers, but it's about writer's block. And if you ever had writer's block, and if you did, what did you do to get out of it?
I have it right this minute. I have just I've finished the third book. I don't know if there'll be any more in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started writing. I just have to write, so I've started writing little vignettes. I don't think I can put it together in a book and funny and serious and adventurous and sad and happy things that have happened that I know about. And I'm doing that just because right this minute I'm not on fire about a subject to write about mm-hmm. the way I was about the other books that I've written that are in print right now
mm-hmm.
and this series, this trilogy. So I'm searching and for something to grab a hold of me and twist me a little bit so that I will sit down and start putting words on paper. So writer's block is a very real thing. I've never really had it before, but after finishing this trilogy, the question inside of me is, okay, now what?
Yeah,
sounds like a blog is in the order. You've got all these little things you're talking about. Maybe a blog is in order for you.
There you go.
Well, I'm not much of a techie, and I don't want to reach a point where I'm driven because I have to have another blog for this week and for next week. I'm just not ready for that, really. But I'll stumble on something. Something will catch me. You know, I'm not going to do. I have a book called Forgotten Heroes of World War II, and I wrote the first one, and then a new publisher bought it and said, we want a second edition, add to it. most people don't realize that a second printing is just the printing of the book again,
mm-hmm.
maybe from a hard cover to a soft cover.
Sure.
But a second printing. But when you see the word second edition, that means that there's been new material added to it. And I would love to get a copy of that to, for instance, North for his series on war stories, but that drove me. I knew men that had been in World War II and grown up around, you know, we all grew up around heroes and we didn't know it, because those who are really in the thick of it, they don't talk about it. And these men, there are, I think, 14 stories in Forgotten Heroes, and none of them had ever told their families anything that is in their chapter in this book. They didn't want to talk to me about it, and they trusted me. They knew me. Most of them I had known, and the book is about the Pacific and the European theater and Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and every single one of them. Once I was just persistent, and they knew that I would not dishonor them in any way. And then one after another, just on an evening or over dinner or something, they would start talking, and I used notes. The tape recorder made them nervous. And once they started, they could not stop. And I could see stones being taken off of their shoulders. And it was hard for them, and it was hard for me. And because this book is the real World War II. As one said, I came home and everybody wanted to hear about the war, but I knew they didn't want to hear about the war. Mm-hmm. They wanted to hear about the war like it was they saw in the movies.
Sure.
They didn't want to hear the way it really was, but in this book, it is the way it really was. And I've had families walk up to me and say, you know, Tom, if you hadn't done that, and we don't know how you did it, but we would have never known because Daddy never talked about it.
Hmm.
So that was a burning kind of thing that I knew was leaving. There's of the men whose stories, there's only one left living right now.
Wow.
And it was something that just drove me. I don't want to do a war thing like that again. I don't want to do the Korean War, and so much has been written about Vietnam. But you stumble onto things that just grab you, and you become involved, and it takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, writer's block is when you don't have that. And right now, I don't have that. I'm sure it happens to all writers. And you just struggle, and then some little light opens up, and you step through that door, and then another little door will open, and before you know it, you're back to writing a book.
Gotcha. Look, I'm going to have to cut you short because we are out of time, my friend.
Well, it's been wonderful.
It's been great.
I've certainly enjoyed it.
Well, good.
I was a consultant to the Port of Los Angeles for a few years back, so I made a bunch of trips out to San Pedro and landing at LAX. And actually, in those eight lanes of traffic between LAX and San Pedro, at one time I got up to 22 miles an hour.
And you still didn't like us, right?
Fast.
Anyway, could I tell the folks my webpage?
Yes, yes, please. Your email address and your webpage, if you would. If you have a Facebook, that's great, too.
I do, but I don't know about Facebook. My agent made me have one, but I don't know how to do it. I have an old-fashioned telephone, really, a little flip phone. But my website is www.thomasesimmons.net. And the Thomas E. Simmons is all small case, no spaces.
Okay.
www.thomasesimmons.net.
Okay.
My email for your audience is T-E-S-I-M. That's Tango Echo Sierra Item Mike at bellsouth.net.
Excellent.
Love to hear from you all. And by the way, if you send me in your email that I promise to get you the brown, the man.
I'm going to have Jerry send you all of our addresses so we can each get a copy.
Yeah, and I'll have the publisher send you one if you want me to.
Perfect. Good. Thank you for joining us this evening.
But only because you're going to find a producer to
work. that's Brill over there.
you boys and girls are great. I think you're doing a wonderful thing, and I encourage all those who keep saying they want to write a book, sit down and write it.
Yep,
can do
we
it.
Agree. Totally. Wholeheartedly. Well, thanks again for joining us, Tommy. It's been wonderful having you with us. And now you can go have that bourbon.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
You're the man.
I want to thank you ever so graciously
for your time
and for doing this. I've really enjoyed it, and I thank you so very much.
Oh, it's very nice. And a half a million people are going to enjoy this. So
I have a feeling he drinks one ice cube.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. I hope they all have a great evening.
Oh, we all will. And thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Tommy Simmons. Next week, we have Michael Brady with us. And his book is, I don't remember the name of it.
Blind Vengeance.
Yeah. It started out really good. It's about all kinds of intelligence stuff and Al-Qaeda and ISIS and a CIA hitman.
A very current book.
Extremely. Extremely.
We moved from Civil War and World War One to
then the week following, we have little Bobby Brill in.
Oh, am I on that? Oh,
yes, the 28th. In fact,
that's
a Russ night, so Russ will be here as well. And we'll be talking about his Lancer series and what else he's got going on. And I'm about 9/10 of the way through my very first Lancer book.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I just got them all in the mail. Thank you, Bob.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And it's which one is it? The
Prescott Affair is the first one.
Santa Fe.
Oh, Santa Fe. Yes. That's the third one.
Yeah. Santa Fe Affair. And it's good. The Chinese guys are just now finding the town, and I have a feeling it's going to be a.
I think you're going to like the end of that one.
Well, I'm fairly certain I will. And Bobby Jean, as always, we will talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
And y'all have a good evening. And Bob, again, thank you. Jerry, always a pleasure having you in the studio.
Well, you have to take me home.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Well, from all of us here at the Writer's Block, myself, Bob Brill, and Jerry, and Bobby Jean out there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, it's time for us to say goodnight. We have shot another Thursday right in the butt. So for us, that's it. And we are out of here.
Bye, Bobby.
Hey.